Hi, buddy. Welcome to a Monday edition of EO Bulldog Hour. Kevin Russ alongside here as always until 3. CG will jump in at that point. CGP until 6 o'clock tonight. I will rejoin Christopher at 3:30, the first of our three visits during the week, as we have Monday on his show, Wednesday on this show in transition, and then Friday we usually have an hour. This Friday, just a half hour for you, because we'll have a baseball game, as the Bulldogs in Utah Valley will play at the end of the week, 5:30, so it'll move Nick and Nick to 3:30. But we have plenty of time to go over emails at tdad1@att.net, T-D-A-D, the number 1@att.net, during this show. And I do want to mention this up front. I had brought this up a couple of weeks ago. It's been an ongoing battle between myself and AT&T about the server that brings the emails into me. So if you have sent emails and I haven't gotten back to you, some of them have just trickled in that were a little bit dated. So I will get to them, I promise, and we'll certainly address it during the week as we head to Bulldog basketball on Wednesday, 7:30, with Boise State in, and then mentioned baseball on Friday, and then the rematch with New Mexico at the Pit on Saturday, and we'll see how that plays out. We'll get those times for you once again 45 minutes prior to tip for Paul and Q, and the Fresno State coverage on 940. We'll also tell you about where the TV availability might be. And the other thing that I did want to bring up, the Sharks are on tonight. Dan Rusinowski, our good friend, up in Vancouver, 6:30 over on 790. They'll drop the puck at 7 o'clock. Sharks have a chance this year to finally hoist the cup. Kiss of death, I know, for Russ and myself, but we'll see if the men in teal can get it done. All right, let's bring up our great friend Paul Leppler, Boise Bulldogs, right now. As we bring Paul up, remind you that the next 3 days he will be in Tulare for World Ag Expo, and he will tell you specifically about that because he will be up 3 hours prior to this show starting, so 11 to 2, he'll have reports for you from Tulare. Paul, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, doing great, Tony, and I'm really, pardon me, really looking forward to that. And just hearing you talk about the Sharks, I can't help but say, I mean, I've been to a lot of sporting events in my life and experienced a lot of things, and I can, you know, I hope I have my radar tuned to see the fun and excitement and beauty in even the smallest of sporting events. But in Vegas after our game Saturday, I went to the Golden Knights game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I'll tell you, that is an incredible place, that arena.
What a show, huh? What a show they put on, right? Worthy of Las Vegas, Paul.
Yeah. And, I mean, it was, I'm such a novice when it comes to hockey. I wasn't aware of all of that. So I was blown away. I mean, if you want a fan experience and an entertainment experience, that's pretty impressive. They're doing a phenomenal job there. And I'm glad I was there. It was an eye-opening experience.
Had a chance to call the Cup Final last year, and I'll tell you what, we knew what, and you know this well because you have a home away from home in Las Vegas because of this conference affiliation and the times that you spend there, not only call games, but obviously with the media days and all of that stuff as well. But for what they went through in October 17 and what they almost were able to do last spring, was an amazing run. You're talking about an expansion team, for goodness sake, that was just a bounce or two away from winning the whole thing. Pretty remarkable. They aren't having as strong a year this year, but they're going to make the playoffs. And what I brought up, they all know what it's like to put on a show in Las Vegas, and it is a show with everything and Yul Brynner. I mean, they really give you your money's worth, don't they? The hockey game is somewhere in there for the hockey fan, but for the casual fan, Paul, you can see why tourists want to check out a Golden Knight game, fair to say.
Absolutely, and they even do a thing where they do a call-out for married, single, tourists,
right,
locals. And it was pretty, that gave you the understanding of who all was there, but they're all into it. It was pretty incredible, extremely intense and extremely loud. And you mentioned, you know, the significance of last year in light of what that city had been through. And that's who I learned the most from. There was a security guard named Susan who I spoke with for quite a while, and she brought that up and how incredible it was to see the community rally around that team, and just reinforces the power of sports to unify, to bring people together. That's certainly what we see here in the Valley with Fresno State. And I'm looking forward to experiencing that the next 3 days in Tulare, being out at the world's biggest ag show and talking right. about Fresno State and how that, you know, interfaces with the ag industry, but just also getting a sense of how many different people and different elements of our society can be brought together behind, you know, some pretty singular ideas.
It's one of the things, Paul, that is really important, and I'm glad you brought it up about the unification of any area because of a common interest. And we've talked about this so often, but it does bear repeating. High school-wise, obviously, their loyalties to your alma mater. We have a lot of great junior college, community college programs throughout this valley, which would divide up the fan bases. But Fresno State, really from Bakersfield to Sacramento, because even though you have fine academic universities in both Bakersfield and Sacramento, you do not have any athletic departments playing at the level that Fresno State does. And I'm not talking about D1 designation because we know what's happened at Sac State. But as far as the commitment, this is the Valley's team, truly the Central Valley's team, all the way from Bakersfield through San Joaquin and Sacramento Valley, all of that stuff. It is a singular unifying force. And what you're going to see, and I know you see it already, because I see it around. I was in Houston, and by the way, Paul George says, hey, and I say Paul George deserves to be the MVP of the NBA the way it's going. But I'm seeing, Paul, Fresno State and sweatshirts and stuff around that I hadn't seen in the few years prior. Okay, they're being worn with great pride by people. Every place I go, I see somebody who's got some sort of Fresno State gear on when I'm doing a game that has something to do with a former Bulldog or what have you. I'm going to guess you in the South Valley are going to see a lot more Fresno State stuff the next 3 days. Is that fair to say?
Well, I'm looking forward to finding out and maybe to understanding, maybe, you know, understand more about what Fresno State does beyond the playing field, you know, what it means to people who are out there. We've got an incredible list of guests. I mean, we've got a lot of the coaches from Fresno State are going to come down and get a taste of the farm show. Former Bulldog athletes who are involved in ag, guys like Ryan right. Colburn, Tom Mendoza, Chris Tomlinson, they're going to join us there over those 3 days. Terry Toomey will come down, Dr. Castro. We'll have some pretty big names on the phone, and I can't even share all of those with you right now because I don't want to, you know, get sideways with that, but I think you'll be surprised by some of those folks. And it's just a chance to tell some of the stories. There are things that I didn't know that I'm learning, that I'm looking forward to sharing with other people that they might not know. You know, hearing about chocolate milk in Fresno State and how that became a national yeah. phenomenon. You know, the My Job Depends on Ag viral sensation is connected to Fresno State. And we're going to hear from the guys who came up with that and what the future of that looks like and how they're fueling future generations of leaders here in our valley. So, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But I'm looking forward to hearing from all these people, to seeing them out there, to experiencing the World Ag Expo. I covered on television years ago, but I haven't been in many years. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And thanks to E.M. Tharp and Golden State Peterbilt for hosting us out there. And, boy, I can't wait. We're going to talk a little honor flight, too, and meet some of the young people who are helping make it possible for our veterans to go see their memorials. So it's going to be a real fun-filled next 3 days. And I have to take one day at a time, Tony, because I looked at it. And between basketball and baseball and the World Ag Expo, the next couple weeks are going to be pretty intense and pretty exciting.
No doubt about it. And getting Paul to be on the air at 11 a.m. the next 3 days. One final note, and I brought this up before. I grew up in a farming family. We owned grape vineyards, Thompson Seedless Grapes in Biola. And I think I might have told you that as a young kid, my dad would leave at 4 o'clock in the morning in the summertime and would come home after dark. And the one thing my mom would ask is, please leave the boots outside the door because they were filled with dirt and everything else. And in the height of naivete, I said, I thought you were one of the owners. And he said, yep, but this is what happens in this valley when you're one of the owners. You are out there working, understand? And right then, Paul, A, I had a great respect for it, and B, I said, where's that microphone? Okay, that's all I can tell you. So lessons learned. You know, you and I were talking about it last week, right, the commonality. Rafer Johnson, Tom Flores, all these guys who grew up in this valley who said they saw what the people older than they and their family gone through, fathers, uncles, etc. And they said, you know what, they want us to do what we want. And if you, you know, wanted to be someone who worked in the fields, that's great. And ownership is terrific. But if all you're doing is working in the field for pennies on the dollar, which was the case many, many years ago, Paul, the motivation, as you know, and you've talked to guys, was to get something better for your life, right? And guys that work in ag now, they do it because of the passion of it. But they do understand it is an incredibly work-centric life. It is not just a few months of the year. It is 12 months a year. It's 24 hours a day. It's 365. It's a tremendous commitment to do this.
Well, it does, but it's so vital. I mean, if we want to be eating almonds and pistachios and tomatoes and wearing stuff made with cotton and, you know, drinking milk, these people are vital to our lives. I had the chance earlier today to visit for a long time with Jack Wolf, and that's going to be on Hometown Heroes in the next couple of weeks. He's 101 years old and one of the most successful farmers California has ever seen. But he started out, when he started out in Arizona, the farm that his dad was working on, he said you could work a day, a 12-hour day for a dollar. So that's about 8 cents an hour. You talk about hard work for little pay. I mean, back in the 30s, that was nuts.
Yeah.
But that hard work pays off, and it's such, I think, a powerful picture for the rest of us when we see the discipline and the commitment that it takes to be successful in agriculture. There are so many parallels we can apply to whatever field we're in, no pun intended, and really help us be successful as well. So I think that's just going to be an eye-opening and inspiring few days down in Tulare.
No question about it. Again, 11 a.m., Paul will be on the air the next 3 days, 12th through the 14th. All right, since we started with Las Vegas, let's spin around to what was happening a little bit farther away from the Strip. And a little bit earlier in the day on Saturday, Paul, I had mentioned when you and I talked last week that Fresno State has played very well in the Thomas and Mack. It's just a building where they have always played well. Not always won, but played a terrific basketball game on Saturday. And I want to come around to where you and I had started a conversation a couple weeks ago. My theory has been that if Fresno State can get any team in this league, including Nevada, into a scatter game, a game where first guy open shoots, because of the tremendous guard play of Fresno State, the Bulldogs have a chance to beat anybody. You feel the same way, that even against Nevada, and we saw it for periods of time when the Wolfpack were here, and we'll see the Wolfpack there on the 23rd, that the Bulldogs in that up-tempo game just seem to handle it better than anybody else in the conference?
Well, I think for the most part that's true. And it's a question of whether they're able to really employ that advantage in the matchup. Certainly officiating has to do with that. I mean, I don't want to open up a can of worms, but I was very intrigued by Utah State's game at San Diego State the other night. We had talked about the game here for Fresno State against Utah State, that one-point Bulldog loss where you get into the final minute and Fresno State's, you know, there have only been three fouls called on Utah State at that point in the second half. If you watched Utah State at San Diego State, yes, the Aztecs changed the game by how they defended Nemish Keita and how they neutralized his threat, but the Aztec guards were able to penetrate, Devin Watson chief among them, and get Utah State's guards in foul trouble. And Sam Merrill, the Aggies' best player, fouled out of that game. And that maybe, you know, cost Utah State the game. So, you know, you look at something like that, you say, if the same officiating had taken place in Fresno State's game, does Fresno State win? And you also say, if Fresno State had a few more fans in the Save Mart Center for that game, like they had in San Diego, would that have affected the officiating? So I think all those little things can be the variables that change it. But, yes, on the surface, all things being equal, if Fresno State is able to utilize that advantage of quick guards who can penetrate, who can distribute, who can finish at the rim, that is a tough matchup for a lot of teams in this league, especially if Braxton Huggins is playing the way he has the last couple games and able to not only shoot that ball on the perimeter, but attack the basket and finish the way he did so impressively against UNLV.
Yeah, 31, 6-9 from three, but also 5-5 from the line and 10-16 overall. And one of the things, Paul, I wanted to bring up, because DeShawn Taylor has been such a critical part of this team ever since he burst on the scene somewhat unexpectedly, and we all looked around after about a month of DeShawn a couple of years ago and said, wow, this kid is really, really good. He does not let his ego get in the way, and that is, yes, he can score, but he also is looking for the hot hand. And that's one of the things I'm so impressed by, Deshaun, and the growth in his game. There were some times in the last couple of years where there just weren't a lot of guys for him to go to, and he had to force his way through to the bucket, and sometimes it ended up with difficult shots. Paul, because he has Huggins, because he has Blackwell around him, his ability to make the right play is just critically important to Fresno State, and I think it's going to serve them well in the tournament. He has turned into a terrific playmaker. We already knew he was a great defender and a really strong offensive player, but his ability to set up teammates is something I think that may have gone a little unnoticed, and he's bringing it to the forefront now.
Yeah, I think he's still learning it himself and still growing in that part of his game himself. And you're right. I mean, he was a complete revelation a couple years ago. He was the reason that team made a bit of a run and, you know, ended up doing what the Bulldogs did. And, you know, last year he was the unquestioned leader of this team, I thought, and the steady presence that made him go. If you look at this year, the four games that Fresno State played without him, I think you can see when they ran into Utah Valley, they really missed his presence. I think that's a Bulldog win if he's in the lineup that day. So there's so many things that he brings to the table. But I'll say this. Knowing Deshaun, knowing his personality, knowing his drive to be the best, I think there's still a couple areas where his game can develop and be fine-tuned. And I think you're talking about one of them, that playmaking, really getting down to its, you know, close to 100% success rate on the decision-making. And I also think that, you know, and you have to be careful with this because emotion has fueled a lot of his success.
Right.
I think the chip on the shoulder has been a huge element of his rise in college basketball. But I think there are times where maybe his emotions take over to a degree that he needs to keep them in check a little more. And, you know, you saw that, I think, cause Fresno State a technical in one of the home games. And you don't want that to happen again in a situation where it's going to affect the outcome of the game. So I think reining in the emotions, making sure it never becomes about him and is always about the team, something he's done a great job of throughout most of his career, and just really locking in down the end. You know, this is down to the wire of his college basketball career, of doing everything exactly the way he knows is going to be best effective. And I think that's how he's driven. I think he does pursue perfection. And, you know, if he continues on that path and maybe – you know, minimizes some of those elements that could be a distraction or could get in the way of success, I think that Fresno State has a chance to do something special in March.
It's funny, you're right on all points, and I will tell you this, that if you were to put that description out there and not delineate the player, some might think you're talking about Russell Westbrook, because that's exactly what has happened with Westbrook this year, who is not having a great shooting year. But the things, the emotion, that the all-attack mode is still there. And because he has Paul George playing, like I said, MVP caliber, 45 on the comeback from 26 down on Saturday night in Houston, he's finally, Paul, developed trust. And I think this is what Deshaun is trying to develop, right, is trust in his teammates. And in fairness to Deshaun, when I talk about the times last year, and you and I had this discussion about Deshaun going up against the tall trees, I don't think he felt he had much of a choice. This year, I think he looks around and he sees Huggins and Blackwell. He knows Nate Grimes has really rounded out his game offensively very well. Sam Bittner is always reliable. He's gotten some help from New Williams. I do think he looks at this roster and says, you know what, there are guys here who can carry the load along with me, and I don't know that he felt that way toward the end of last year.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And I think, you know, the other factor there from a chemistry standpoint has been getting used to Braxton Huggins, learning his game, understanding how to help facilitate Braxton and not compete with him. And, you know, and as every young student athlete has, as every member of any team has, the challenge of getting your own ego out of the way and saying, we're all in for the team goals. I'm not going to be threatened by somebody else who can do some of the same things I can do, or maybe even do some things better than I can. I'm going to understand my role on the team, and part of my role is making everybody else better in their roles. And I think if he just stays within that mindset, Fresno State, like I said, has a great chance. And, you know, you have a team that can do it in different ways on different nights. And there are stretches, and you saw it just even within that Vegas game, stretches where DT was leading the way, stretches where it was Huggins, stretches where Noah Blackwell said, hey, you know, don't forget me about me on offense. I've got a good shot. I can launch it from different angles in different ways. I can, you know, jump stop and go off 2 feet. I can go off one leg at the elbow. I can penetrate. I can, you know, jiggle and juke my way past people and get to the rim. So, you know, from a guard standpoint, Fresno State has a lot of options. And one thing I'd really like to see, since we're focusing on the guards, you know, as we come down the stretch, is trying to get New Williams in a place where he's consistent, where you know what you can expect from him on a given night. And maybe some of that comes down to him attacking the basket a little bit more. I mean, you see how quick New is and how high he can jump, and you think, what if every once in a while in the flow of that offense, you know, if he can handle the ball and not turn it over, can you give him the freedom to, let's say, fake the reversal to the top of the key and then just drive hard with that dominant left hand to the bucket? He can jump over a lot of the guys in the league, and if he's up in the air around the rim and there happens to be a shot blocker, someone else is collapsing too, so somebody's open on the perimeter. But I think, you know, and who am I? The coaches know this ultimately better than I do, but I'm just throwing that out as an example of potentially another step for this offense to develop. If you make New a little more versatile and you find some consistency out of him, then it's just even another greater pick-your-poison situation for any of the opposition.
No, you're right. I mean, he's a guy, when he shoots with confidence, he is a huge threat from three and can be that one guy that you try to leave open while you help on others, and he can burn you big time. I also want to mention that Deshaun had a nice stat line, but I'll guarantee if you talk to him, he'll say 2 of 5 from the free throw line. Not acceptable. That is not Deshaun Taylor, 2 of 5. That is an aberration. And the good news is the rest of the team shot it well, and so the Bulldogs were, you know, coming through that first half anyway, in a position where their free throw shooting did not take them out of the game overall. Fresno State 10 of 14, so that's not bad, but Deshaun is not used to being 2 of 5. All right, since you brought up San Diego State, I know you don't necessarily want to be right about this, but you did bring up, Paul, that you thought that once again, as is the case many years with that club, whether it was Steve Fisher or Dutch or what have you, that they seem to find their rhythm. They have a couple pretty big wins lately. Are the Aztecs once again ascending to lookout in March status, in your opinion?
I think you have to assume that'll be the case because of the talent on that team. And, you know, last year I think it was a matter of the new element, Devin Watson, who had transferred from USF, gelling with other guys who were getting some of their minutes taken away and certainly some of their shots taken away. This year, you know, it's hard to really pinpoint it. I think the talent is clearly there. I don't know. It's the second year of a new head coach, and then you lost some key assistants. And, you know, watching here the way Justin Hudson and Tim Shelton engage their players and the relationships they have, I can't help but wonder if the Aztecs are missing some of that connection. It may just be a matter of time where those bonds had been formed. Here are guys that recruited you, guys that you've known, guys that you trust, and now all of a sudden you've got some new faces stepping into those shoes, and it may just take some time for their players to get used to it, to speak the same language. Maybe they're, you know, at some point things start to fall apart and you have to put the pieces back together and get everyone on the same page. But I think to Brian Dutcher's credit, he found a way to do that last year. Were Hudson and Shelton a part of that? It's quite possible. You know, and where are the players' minds? That's a question mark as well. But I think when you look at McDaniels, when you look at some of the freshmen, and they were key in the win over Utah State the other day, and then the veteran guys like Watson and Hemsley, the talent is there without question. And I think you have to put San Diego State right up there next to Nevada in terms of just raw talent in this conference. So you cannot take the Aztecs for granted. I think their track record over the years tells you have to be ready for them in March, and I think they will be a factor. And really, the way I look at the remaining schedule for Fresno State, you know, you've got 4 home games and 3 road games. One of those road games is at Nevada, where no one expects you to win, and if you pull it off, you know, you're golden, but you have nothing to lose there. Your home games are all games, I think, you're going to be heavily favored in. Maybe the Boise State game would be the one that's closest, but you won convincingly on the road in Boise, so you have an idea of what it takes to beat the Broncos, and you know what you have to do again, or maybe adjust to if they failed last time and they're trying to mix things up. You know, Wyoming is coming off a win, and they have one of the most unstoppable players in the league, so you're going to have to deal with him. Air Force is a really quality team this year and better up front than the Falcons usually are, so that'll be a challenge. And then San Jose State, who hasn't won a league game yet. But those are all games I think Fresno State and its fan base should expect to win. Then you look at the three road games, and you have Nevada, as I mentioned. The other two are in Albuquerque against New Mexico and in Viejas against San Diego State. And I think those two games are going to be, you know, pivotal games for Fresno State, big opportunity games for Fresno State. If you can find a way to win one or both of those games at the Pit and at Viejas, I think all of a sudden you may kick yourself up to a different tier of postseason potential, and I'm going to be watching those ones closely. But this staff's done a great job of taking one game at a time. I know right now they're ready for Boise State's best shot. They know the Broncos have had a great run under Leon Rice and finish strong every year, make themselves a contender. Derek Alston is coming on strong after the big game the other day against San Jose State. They've had problems with Alex Hobbs in the past. There are plenty of things Boise State can do to make it difficult on the Dogs. But, you know, there's another one. Of the home games remaining, I think that's the stiffest challenge Fresno State faces. So I hope we see a big crowd Wednesday night at 7:30. Especially, let's get some of those football folks. I mean, if you didn't get to be there in Boise when it was snowing, and you listened to Pat Hill and Cam screaming in exultation, or you watched that on TV, here's your chance to see Fresno State, Boise State in person. And really, I think, kind of rejoice in the victory of that Mountain West Championship football game and hope you see something similar from the basketball team.
Well, I know this. Boise State, basketball-wise, has got to regroup because it has not been a great time for them as of late. So if they're going to resurrect their season, it's going to start, like you said, where much like the Bulldogs are not expected to win in Nevada. Not a lot of people expect the Broncos to come in here Wednesday and win, so that takes some of the pressure off of them. But they are a good basketball team. And you bring up Hobbs, who sometimes I think that there are like three Hobbs out there, right? There was a guy who used to play in the NBA, Paul Charlie Scott, came out of North Carolina. And he was the ultimate garbage man, and what I meant was every loose ball seemed to belong around the rim to Charlie Scott. You swear he was in two places at once. At least against Fresno State, that's Hobbs, right? Every time he turns around, he seems to be at the glass. I mean, is that pretty much the way it looks? It looks that way to me all the time when he's playing. So, you know, we'll see. Also, I wanted to ask you this. You know, the loss Nevada suffered at the Pit, I think you and I both knew that when New Mexico came to Lawler Center, a message needed to be delivered. Would you say Nevada delivered the message about the time the national anthem wrapped up the other day? I mean, that looked like a misprint if you were looking at the crawl at the bottom of the screen, Paul. It was like 32-9 at one point, something like that.
All I know is I looked up at the end of our game in Vegas and saw the halftime score was 51-26, so I figured that the message had been delivered and not so well received.
Hey, where are you about Nevada? Look, we all know this. Fresno State probably has to go through Nevada in March. You would love to think if you upset the Wolfpack, and Bulldogs have played well at Lawler Center over the years, if you win the game on the 23rd and sweep through to a final against Nevada, maybe you have a shot, but realistically you probably have to cut down the nets. Paul, are you a big, big Nevada fan beyond that? I mean, how do you feel? Because sometimes it's mixed emotions. Boise State in football has been this way for Fresno State. How do you feel about Nevada in the big dance? Are you going to be a big fan favorite in regard to pulling for Nevada because of what it does for this league?
Yeah, I think you have to be. And you know, I'll pull for them, too, because of guys who I know who are around that program. You know, John Ramey, their play-by-play guy, does a tremendous job. And there's so many administrators there who I've known for years, from football to basketball to baseball. You see what it means to them to have that kind of run. And really, it's good for the conference. You know, I feel the same way about that as, you know, in the offseason, it looked like a pretty strong possibility Gonzaga was going to come to the Mountain West,
right,
which I think would have been wonderful in a lot of ways and in multiple sports, but it didn't happen. So with Nevada in the tournament, yeah, you want the Wolfpack to make a run. It's going to strengthen the league. And I think, as, you know, the committee starts talking about it and looking at it, if they really think Nevada is that good and there are teams in the conference that are competitive with Nevada, why go strictly off the net ranking? If Nevada, you know, the thing the other day said they're, you know, a top four seed as far as, you know, the 1 through 16, if they're that good and the separation is that little, why shouldn't some of these other teams be on the bubble or in the mix? And those conversations can only get strengthened over time if the Wolfpack is able to find sustained success. And I think, you know, Musselman's proving what he can do. He's established a pattern and a formula. It's working. I do think that Nevada has some things to prove in the tournament once they get there. I think they'll deserve the seed they get because of the body of work of the record. But I think there'll be some tough matchups. For instance, if they go up against one of these ACC teams or a Big Ten team who has smaller, really quick guards, how's Nevada going to match up with that? You know, do you put Jazz Johnson in the lineup? Do you go with Henson? Are you going to be able to stay out of foul trouble against a team that's really equipped that way and also has the muscle up front? See, the Bulldogs, when they played them, they've got those quick guards, but they're a little thin in the front court in terms of just sheer size to body up with Nevada. But some of those other teams, that's not going to be an issue. So I'm curious to see how that works out, especially in a situation then in the tournament where you're not going to get the calls you get in the Mountain West. In the Mountain West, you're the big dog. You're expected to win. You're expected to get a lot of offensive rebounds. You're expected to do a lot of things. And naturally, I think the officiating coincides with that. In the tournament, on a neutral court, against a team with a much bigger budget, that may not be the same dynamic. So when Nevada faces some of those challenges, how will Musselman's team respond? And that's what I'm looking forward to finding out in March.
I think it's a fair comment, Paul, and as you and I have talked about this Nevada team, and I will be pulling for them because of the benefit of the conference, there's no doubt about it. There's a rivalry. You and I think are in agreement with Hawaii out of the conference full-time, only being an associate member. The only club where, when Fresno State is playing either men's or women's sports, the only club I know for sure that there's going to be an edge to the proceedings is Fresno State and Nevada. We've talked about it. They recruit the same areas. They are long-standing conference rivals, and so there is a little bit of an edge there. Boise State, it's about football. With Nevada, it's across the board, including baseball, as you and I have talked. So there's always mixed emotion, but I do want to see this Wolfpack team succeed. But the one question mark I have is this: the thing we saw here that I think is an issue always. Nevada has tremendously talented athletes, and like any other team, if they're hot from three, they're going to beat you. But, Paul, the stability from the guard play, and that's why I mentioned to you at the start of the show today, if you can get Nevada into a scatter game, sometimes I think it gets them out of their offense and it plays away from their advantage. And that's something, as you know, when you get to the NC2As, as you pointed out, not only are the crowds not on your side, but the officials may not be. Paul, your guards have got to settle it down, and sometimes I wonder from the point if the Nevada guards can settle it down. If things are going great, fine, but when it starts to go south, do they have what they need to keep stable and fight through it? That's my question about that club. Not the talent, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think the guy who needs to step up and answer that question is Caleb Martin. I don't think you can expect anyone else to do it. I think he has to be the guy who has the ball in his hands, can take care of it, sets the tone for him. You certainly don't want him in foul trouble, which they've dealt with a couple times this year and almost cost him a couple games. That's going to be real interesting to watch moving forward. And, you know, I think seeing Nevada go up to Logan and how that game goes down against Utah State, and certainly when the Bulldogs visit there September 23rd, those are going to be some games to really watch closely. And I don't want people to forget either. I mean, we're talking about the Farm Show and basketball, but Bulldog baseball opens Friday night, 6:05, a four-game homestand, and coming off the double play dinner and the golf tournament the other day and just spending some more time around these young men. I'd seen them on the practice field, but now you see them in other places. You see the chemistry this team is building already, how much they enjoy each other. You're reminded by the experience this team will have when you have a couple seniors who could have been drafted come back instead, and Zach Ashford and McCarthy Tatum. Some sophomores and juniors who have way more experience than sophomores and juniors usually do, the depth of talent on the pitching staff, the ingredients are there. This can be a very special 2019 Bulldog baseball campaign, And you have, you know, on a home schedule, there are a few fewer opportunities to see him this year. They don't play as many home games as they have the last couple of years. Coach Batesel said there's a reason for that. You know, this is a team that's older, that, you know, doesn't need to build that comfort zone on the road, on at home, should already have it, and can handle playing more games away from home. And that gives you the opportunity to build the RPI quicker when every win on the road counts for 1.2 and wins at home only 0.8 of a win. So, you know, I'd say because there are only a couple dozen home games, get out there and don't miss the first four this weekend, and then pay attention when they do go on the road to see if they can really crank up that momentum.
I hope people are out there. And, Paul, as we go through this time of year in the last few minutes we have here, remind people, again, lineup-wise, Paul will be at the Ag Show next 3 days in Tulare beginning at 11 a.m. between 11 and 2. You also have the basketball game, which is a Mountain West CBS Sports Network game, Mountain West Conference game, of course, against Boise State, 6:45, the tip-off show, 7:30 or shortly thereafter. They will actually have the tip. And then baseball on Friday, Saturday, X across the board, but with basketball on Saturday, won't have that broadcast, but we'll have Friday and Sunday. And, Paul, I want to finish because I know you brought up Terry Toomey, and we all read the article that the Bob Quatta had in the Bee, and our pal Stephen Clovis had emailed about it. And he had said, look, I know that cutting sports is a non-starter, but he believes everything should be on the table. He also likes the idea of using social media to promote. He's also curious about the fan experience at every individual sporting event. Paul, he asks about the need to double the donations in 1 year, etc. Paul, what is your feeling about this? And I know you'll talk to Terry about it. Is this doable in the short term at Fresno State? Do you have to at some point look at the 21 mouths to feed, or do you say that that is definitely going to stay from Dr. Castro down as a non-starter as we try to fund scholarship, etc., with a budget deficit that has been hanging around for the last several years?
Well, that's what he said, so I think you have to take him at his word, but he's responsible. So I think the need is out there. People are aware. And let's see how this community steps up. You know, if you set yourself a deadline and fundraising hasn't materialized by that deadline and there's no other wiggle room or there's no kicking the can down the road and you have to make those tough decisions, I think you make those tough decisions. But I think it's so, you know, really important and crucial to understand what your goals are and what your priorities are. Are your priorities to have X amount of programs, or are your priorities to have X amount of successful programs? Are your priorities to have, you know, this many programs or this many programs that give scholarship opportunities to California kids and maybe even Valley kids?
Right.
Those are things that, you know, you have to decide how you feel about and what really is more important than something else. So if it comes to that, I'm sure he'll have those discussions and, you know, he won't rush into any rash judgments. But I think it's an opportunity for folks in the Valley. And in my mind, the pathway to fixing that problem is to, I think, take a page from the past. And the reason Fresno State was able to build such successful athletic programs and facilities and all the things that we saw happen in the 80s and through the 90s and even into the early 2000s, it wasn't one particular leader. It wasn't one particular coach. All those people had a hand in it. But it was this community, Tony. It was the grassroots. It was the people who said, hey, that's something I can be a part of. I'm going to jump on board. In fact, you know what? I'm going to volunteer my time to call all my friends and help raise money for scholarships. And then we're going to celebrate those student athletes who got the scholarships, and we're going to have a dinner for that. And, oh, by the way, I'm taking my kids with me. So when they grow up, they're going to want to do the same thing. And we're going to cultivate that generational support of the university and particularly the athletic programs. And I think that's what made Fresno State Athletics great. That's what separated Fresno State from those other state schools who ended up having to drop football and aren't in the same conference with Fresno State anymore. To my mind, whether it's exactly the way it was before or just taking the things that you would agree were really good elements of that model in the past, I think you have to get back to a system that really facilitates mass engagement across the valley, giving people a connecting point and allowing them to feel like they're part of it, that they're invested, that they're going to share in the success when it happens. And, if they can find a way to do that, I think some really bright days are ahead for Fresno State.
Well, I hope that all the teams have the kind of success the football program has had. I know that's a high bar, but when your lead dog sets that example, you hope everybody can follow suit. Paul, as I let you go, I know it's a very busy week with what you're going to do in Tulare, also with football. With football, with basketball.
Hey, now watch it, Tony. Big spring practice is next month. Don't scare me.
I was gonna say, and I was thinking of the Coach U show, and I was thinking of Teddy Coach U show also for basketball on Thursday. But
not this week. Not this week. No Valentine's show.
Okay. Yep. Well, you know that's good.
Yeah.
Look, you talk about the long distance relationship, right? Hutt has San Diego and Fresno to deal with at the same time. So I know that's the case. All right. Last thing comes from Scott. And I do want to get your take on this in the last 60 seconds, Paul. Cleveland Browns going to give Kareem Hunt another try. I bring this up not only because it's in the emails, but we saw Kareem Hunt play great against Fresno State. Not that that has anything to do with this issue, and also great in the National Football League before. What happened, Paul. Do you have any part of you that says, no, there should not be another shot? That's what Scott wants to know.
Well, you know, as a father of daughters, there's certainly a part of me that feels that way. But I also understand that people deserve second chances. And if you're going to give someone a second chance when there are giant red flags and recent missteps, I think you better have a well-thought-out justification of the second chance you're allowing. So if they have contingency plans, if they have boundaries set up, if they have parameters in place that, you know, that make it clear to everyone who is concerned that they're doing everything with their due diligence and with, you know, a good plan. And, you know, I guess you say that's their organization, it's their prerogative. But certainly I think it's an area you need to tread very carefully on and make sure you really know what you're getting into, because, you know, what happened with him was inexcusable and, you know, for a lot of people on the surface, unforgivable. You know, my faith informs me differently. I you know, believe in forgiveness. But, you know, if someone had violated my children the way, you know, his victim was violated, that would be very difficult to get past.
It's well said, and I'll tell you what, it's already started on the national front, and I guess if there's a positive from it, Paul, it's going to be, it will continue the national discussion. And to Scott, you said they only are agreeing to do this because he can still play as opposed to Ray Rice. Obviously, his ability plays into decision-making. It would be really naive to think otherwise. This is a somewhat elastic bit of ethics by any team, because if he couldn't contribute, he would not be given a second chance. So, you know, it's for each individual to decide.
And I'll throw one more thing on there, Tony. And obviously, you can never fully know what's in someone's heart. But I think if I were handling the situation, the thing I'd be very concerned about was his mentality about it. Are you getting a sense from him, a clear sense that he understands what he did, why it was wrong? Is he contrite? Is he apologetic? Is he remorseful? Because if you don't see those things, I think you're doing everyone a disservice, him included, if you put him back out there when that lesson hasn't been learned and the gravity of his offense hasn't been grasped.
Yeah, you're right about that. Paul, appreciate it, my friend. Have a great week, 3 days in Tulare. A lot of play-by-play here in town and also on the road on Saturday in Albuquerque. Take care, my friend. I'll be in touch.
All right, Tony. Keep smiling.
You got it. Good friend Paul Leppler, voice of your Bulldogs. Take a break. Come back with more on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. A couple minutes ago on the show, CG is coming up. CGP until 6 o'clock tonight over on 790, 630. Our good friend Dan Rusinowski, the only voice the Sharks have ever had. Have the play-by-play for you. Sharks in Vancouver tonight. San Jose looking at a very good seed, as we're not that far away from playoff time. You know, the NBA All-Star break, basketball-wise, used to be the de facto middle point of the season because they're starting earlier. There's only about 20-plus games to go in an 82-game season, and National Hockey League had their All-Star game a couple weeks back, and they also are down the home stretch as both will start the playoffs in April, which we'll get here, I hope, in a big hurry, because I'm cold. That's all I can tell you. All right. I wanted to get to one email. I'll be back with CG around 3:30 in transition. But Jerome had emailed in last week about Robin Lopez when we talked about Robin's desire to come to the Warriors, and he said that Robin's a former classmate of his, so obviously it's Brooke. And SJM and wanted to know if Robin will actually end up in Oakland. Well, a couple of things have to happen. One, the Bulls have to buy him out. That should happen shortly. Then the Warriors are going to wait to see what happens with DeAndre Jordan, who would fit them a little bit better. Robin fits what they want terrifically well because the Warriors have an open roster slot. They've had it open since Damian Jones got hurt earlier in the year. If DeAndre stays in New York because the Knicks might keep him thinking they're going to get Zion Williamson if the league doctors the footballs and they'll want DeAndre there as a mentor, that would mean Robin would be the guy the Warriors would pick up. Robin wants to come back close to home. He also would love to chase a ring and be able, quite possibly, to play against his brother with that love fest. They're always needling one another in an NBA Finals. I hope it happens with Robin, but to answer your question, Jerome, it depends upon what happens with DeAndre Jordan. If he's bought out by the Knicks, he will probably end up with the Warriors so he can get the ring. Stay tuned. The NBA is much more interesting away from the court right now than they are on it. This is KFIG Fresno.